This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Support for this podcast is provided by Subchuck Law. Revolution Recap thanks Subchuck Law for their support of our show, local independent media, and their mission of bringing unbiased truth. Revolution Recap would also like to thank Six Point Builders for their support. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area.
Welcome to a special episode of Revolution Recap. We will actually be taking a break from recapping and the Revolution to preview the upcoming Copa America, which gets started on June 20th. Of course, this is the primary South American tournament that is being played in North America, with a bunch of teams that are actually not from South America. So we'll get into all that and why that happens and if it makes sense or if it doesn't make sense. And then we'll also walk through some of the teams that are participating, the ones that you're familiar with and the ones that you may not be familiar with. And when I say we, I mean the two esteemed colleagues I'm joined by today. First up is Sam Minton. Some of you may know Sam Minton as the leader, founder of the Blazing Musket. Also, he was able to get Dave Romney back into the lineup for the New England Revolution single-handedly. Really glad to have you with us, Sam. Do you intend on making any predictions that will come true for the Copa America?
I mean, I hope so. I hope that the lovely nation of Brazil ends up winning it all, not to spoil it all. But besides that, don't know if I have any pull there in terms of roster choices. Maybe just start Hendrick. That would be pretty cool. But Tom, great to be back and excited to get to talk about some international soccer.
Yeah, I mean, it's enjoyable. It's nice to put away, the MLS and all the other leagues where we have to talk about transfer fees and, you know, how much is this guy worth and how much is that guy worth and all that stuff. And also today we are joined by Caleb Pongratz from Prost Soccer. So Caleb has been on the show before. We are happy to have him back. And Caleb, along with Sam, has a lot more knowledge of international soccer than I do, because I don't watch too much of it. So we will be heavily relying on Caleb. So Caleb, you know, how are you doing? And what are you most excited about for this tournament?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to see what the U.S., Canada, as well as Mexico have to bring to the table against some of the better teams from the Americas. I think it's been a testament over time that we're one of the weaker teams, and it's been that way for a while, but I kind of want to see how they perform in this tournament altogether.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're looking to try and make some money off of those performances, BetOnline is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, all the way to the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. And when the game's over, you can head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, the game starts here. And of course, I have now, for the second consecutive podcast, forget to mention that we are actually a part of the BLEAV Network, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, but just in case you forgot, there it is, and I have now covered the minimum of my hosting responsibilities, which is to introduce the hosts and get the ad read in correctly. So with that, let's jump right into what most people that are listening to this podcast are going to have on their mind, which is the U.S. team. Apparently, they had a friendly that didn't go so well, and then they had a friendly that went a little bit better, and that may have caused a couple of talking points among U.S. soccer supporters. So the first question, and Caleb, we'll go straight to you with this one, and then Sam, you can jump in and agree or rebut what Caleb has to say. But how important is this tournament for the U.S. team?
I feel like this tournament is not necessarily important, but more or less a test for this U.S. men's national team roster. There have been raging doubts in regard to our results, the United States results against top 20 nations. And I think those are some valid concerns that we as a nation should have as we enter the World Cup that we're about to host in 2026. And to give a little background on that, the U.S. is ranked 11th in the world right now, but we have a 5-win, 7-draw, 6-loss record against top 20 nations under head coach Greg Berhalter, with four of those 5 wins against Mexico. And the other one is against Iran. So if you exclude Mexico, the U.S. has a 7.1 win percentage against the top 20 teams in the world. That's awful. It's vital for us to compete at a high level in this tournament so that we can be prepared in the biggest tournament in 2026 so that we don't make a mockery of ourselves at home.
Yeah, and I think Caleb kind of hinted at this too. I think especially with this World Cup cycle not having qualifying for the United States, this is really pretty much their major test and kind of building point leading up to a 2026. So I'll definitely say it's important. I think you're going to be going up against some very good talent. You're going to be going up against some very good teams. Even if you look at the group stages, they're going to have to face off against a nation like Uruguay. So I think you're going to get tested and you're going to be able to see, is it just going to be another World Cup where the U.S., makes it, to the group stage and makes a pass and maybe gets the knockout game and gets knocked out immediately? Or if there's going to be more of a run, I think when it came out that the United States was hosting the 2026 World Cup along with Canada and Mexico, it was this big point where you could possibly see the game grow, have another exponential boost. So I think this tournament is kind of leading up to that. And for instance, if the United States was able to just immediately go out in the group stage, it would be a massive failure. If they're able to make a run, it will give you hope and kind of hope that the game can grow, and that'll be a massive moment in 2026. So I think it's a building block, but I do think it's important for the United States to get results, and I would say even kind of make a decent run in the tournament.
Yeah, and this is always the interesting point. If you think back to Belgium, right, when Belgium had this golden generation, and you kind of felt like there was like 3 or 4 tournaments in a row where like they're really, they're building and they're building and they're building, and then all of a sudden the whole thing's all over and they actually didn't win anything. So when you talk about, okay, they need to, this is going to feed into how they do in 2026. Are we past the point with Greg Berhalter where just seeing, performances or saying, I can kind of see how this might work? Like, are we well beyond that point? I mean, technically, this is his second term as well. We'll get into that if we have time. Does it need to be more than that? Does it need to be, like you both mentioned, look, it's not just getting out of the group stage and squeaking by. Like, we need to go out and play a Brazil or an Argentina and knock them out. And knock them out not with a goalkeeper makes an amazing, but like the only thing I see really coming across on Twitter is, Matt Turner made 80,000 saves in the last game. Like, do we want to move beyond
international recognition for our goalkeepers just making record numbers of saves in important games?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the U.S., obviously Matt Turner's kind of been the big talking point ever since he's been able to kind of, you know, snag that number one starting spot. And I think it's really going to come down to, especially in this tournament, you know, if you're able to get that scoring, I feel like it's always been a point. And it was the hope with a guy like Balogun coming in, really making an impact, that he would fix those number nine problems. So I think you're going to need to see the kind of stars on the roster step up. Obviously, we've seen Matt Turner done it on the international stage. But I think, obviously, you need a Pulisic, Gio Reyna, Yunus Musa, Weston McKennie, and then obviously up top, I would say, most prominently Fuller and Balogun. But also, if you get guys like Ricardo Pepi, Josh Sargent, if healthy, stepping up, those are going to be really key. But, you know, like you mentioned, I think the U.S. has to make a run in this tournament. And if they don't, it's starting to question, is Berhalter the right guy to lead you into this very important World Cup?
So, Cale, what does that run look like for you? What is they've got to at least get X into the tournament? They have to get at least this far. Is it the semifinal? Is it all the way to the final? What's the minimum for you to say, okay, all right, we're not going to embarrass ourselves in 2 years' time?
I think the number one goal right now, they're already in a competitive group as it begins with. The U.S. is in the same group as Uruguay, who are one of the favorites to win the entire tournament. They also have a pretty, I wouldn't say strong Panama side, but a known Panama side, as well as Bolivia. I think bare minimum, the U.S. should get out of the group. If they don't get out of the group, that's a failure right away. It would be better if they could top the group, get a result against Uruguay. That would be huge. Uruguay is one of the top nations in the world currently. If I'm not mistaken, they are 15th. So they are a little below us at the moment. But I think that's a team that will give us a battle. It'd be definitely a test. The one issue is if the U.S. gets out of the group, they're playing either Brazil, who they just tied 1-1, or they're playing Colombia, more than likely, who they just lost 5-1 to. So it's dangerous to say, oh, if we don't get to the quarterfinals, it's a failure, knowing that we're playing a Brazil and a Colombia. But this U.S. team shouldn't be afraid of those teams. They should be confident going into it. So I would say a quarterfinal would be great for this team. Round of 16, we'll see how we fare against the Brazil or Colombia. But I think if we get out of the round of 16, that's a good result for this group.
That's a great Greg Berhalter obviously can't come out and say that. He can't come out and say, you know, look, we've got to win the group, and then we've got to go out against Colombia and show them what time it is. So Sam, do you think? I mean, this is the thing, right? If you're gonna have a big run in the World Cup in 2 years, you're gonna have to beat a Colombia, or you're gonna have to beat a Brazil, or you're just gonna go home, which won't be a far trip. But so, Sam, what do you think? Do they have to win the group, and then knock out whoever they face if it ends up being Brazil or Colombia?
Yeah, I definitely think if you were able to win the group, I think even just getting out of the group kind of measly would kind of leave a sour taste and would probably possibly lead to, you know, Greg Berhalter's job status being questioned. And I think if you win the group, obviously, that would be great. And if you're able to face someone like Colombia, I mean, I think they're on like a 20-plus, you know, unbeaten streak. But I do think that they're a team that if you want to go and make a run, you should be able to go and beat, even though you got absolutely demolished by them. I think that's a team that the United States, if they're going to be this kind of soccer nation, they need to beat. Brazil, it would be tough. But again, if they're going to progress, I think you need to start seeing them getting wins against these teams. Like, at least in the Brazil friendly, there was some promising takeaways. You did have Matt Turner, you know, making some, you know, quality saves. But you were able to see Christian Pulisic kind of come up big, even though, you know, Alisson will get criticized for how he built the wall and, you know, handled that free kick. But I think it just really comes down to being able to have those key performances in these big games. So I would say you have to win the group, and then if you're able to, you know, get past that first kind of knockout stage game, that would definitely leave fans feeling happy and feeling positive heading into 2026.
All right, okay, let's take the opposite here. What's what do you see? What would have to transpire in this tournament for you to say, and let's just assume that you're not there already. You know, what would have to transpire for you to say, okay, that this I can't watch this team with this coach for another 2 years. We can't have the world's attention on the U.S., Canada, and Mexico for what'll almost certainly be, you know, the biggest World Cup in its history. Like, I can't do this anymore. What would transpire the next 2 or 3 weeks that would bring you to that point?
If we don't make it out of the group, if we fail to make it out of the group in a tournament in our own country, we bun everything. I think the whole staff at that point needs to go. If we make it out of the group and we lose like a 1-0 to Brazil or Colombia, that's up to the U.S. Soccer Federation to say, are we confident with how we did? And that will also depend on how they did in the group stage. But if we don't make it out of the group, no way. Get rid of them at this
point. What if they crawl out of the group, Caleb?
Crawling out it's kind of hard. So if it depends on our results. Like if we battle to a draw against, like, because I think we play Uruguay last, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
If we need a draw against Uruguay to make it out of the group, and we battle for the draw to make it out of the group, that's fine. I'm fine with that.
You don't want to go into that game. I mean, what if you go into that game and it's like, look, we've got to get something here because we couldn't handle Bolivia and Panama.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Bolivia, by the way, but like,
yeah,
average soccer person is going to be like, really? Bolivia and Panama?
If we go into the Uruguay game needing a win, that's very scary. That's scary, in my opinion. I know the U.S. doesn't have, I don't know the correct terminology of it, but I'm pretty sure we don't have a solid record against Panama all time. Like, it's good, but it's not as good as it should be. So I think Panama will be not a test, but it will be a, whoa, they're coming to battle. Bolivia should be a simple one. But then again, Trinidad was a simple one way back when, and we couldn't.
That was a long time ago. All those guys are gone.
Yeah, well, the precedent is still there.
No, 100%.
But if we fail to make it out of the group, get rid of all of them.
That's the thing. Sam, do you, you know, we're talking about, you know, Berhalter, you know, sticking around, not sticking around. Do you feel like maybe we should be past that point already?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that we're at this point when we just kind of went through it when Greg Berhalter was kind of removed or his contract wasn't picked up. And, you know, you had DJ Callahan and everything. It seems like the fact that we're even kind of considering it makes you question that decision to bring him back, because you're already wondering if this is the right guy. Should we get rid of him? Should we bring in someone else? I would probably say, even if you have, you know, a second place finish, you're probably considering in the group. You're probably considering his position. Obviously, if you don't make it out of the group, I think he has to be let go.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really interesting. You know, I think if you kind of look at the records with Panama, I'm guessing that some of those were away legs, like in the nation as well. The fact that you're going to be in the United States and primarily, and obviously, you know, there is some, I think that should boost the United States chances versus Panama. But overall, you know, like you mentioned, like Caleb mentioned, if you're going into that Uruguay game needing a win because you couldn't get a win versus Bolivia or Panama, I don't think that's a good sign. And I don't think that's going to be good or, you know, lead to you feeling confident about the United States chances in the World Cup going up against presumably better nations footballing wise. Than, you know, a Bolivia, for example. So I do think that they have to get out of the group and not just, you know, like you kind of mentioned, you know, crawl or limp into it. I think they need to kind of make a statement of intent. And if we're able to even, you know, further that with a win against a Brazil or Colombia, that's when you can be positive. That's when you'd be like, all right, we can have some stability and kind of see, you know, how the 2026 World Cup goes for Greg.
Yeah, I mean, and this will be the last one, then we can kind of move on. But I mean, I always kind of feel like you need to get to a point with a group and a coach where, like, these competitive games against really good teams, but oh yeah, boy, you know, that game against Belgium, you know, we fought tooth and nail, and you know, we really battled, but we didn't win. Like, at some point, does that have to be considered? This isn't good enough anymore. Like, we've been talking about taking these big steps as like a soccer playing country. You've got players coming out with a higher technical and tactical level that this country has ever had, even from 10 years ago. I mean, if you watch like a USL game now, the standard of a USL game is a million miles from where it was, you know, 10 years ago. So, like, do either one of you feel like, look, at some point we have to say, actually, no, you know what? Losing to Colombia in the U.S., like, that, no, it's not good enough anymore. We don't want to go out and just, oh, we gave those guys a really tough game. Do you think there is a point where it says, no, you know what? No, we're not going to be that country anymore. We need to be a team that goes out and beats Colombia, not just has a good performance.
Yeah, I would definitely say that if the United States is going to take that next step, that essentially is the next step. These games that we, you know, fans would be, you know, okay with a draw or okay with a hard-fought loss, those have to turn into wins. And so, like you mentioned, a win against Colombia, a win against Brazil, that's when you can kind of see that the United States is progressing to the football nation that I think we all want to see them become. So I think, you know, that is the case. We're at a point, you know, you have all these players playing overseas, like you mentioned, the technical aspect of it. These players should ideally be competing with the best in the world. So I think, obviously, you know, they still have a long way to go in terms of, you know, getting into the deeper parts of the World Cup, or dare I say, even making it to a final. But if you're going to get there, you have to start winning these crucial games and making an impact and not just being satisfied with a hard-fought draw. You want to go out in every game you're playing and expect and, you know, aspire for a win. It's not enough to just be like, all right, well, it's Brazil, so
what are we going to do?
Yeah. You have to go out, want to win. And when you don't win, you have to be upset about it and not just be like, all right, well, it was a tough opponent. We at least showed that we can hang with them. That's not the right mindset to have if they're going to be the, you know, nation in soccer that they want to be.
Yeah. I mean, Caleb, losing is supposed to be pain, right? It's supposed to hurt. You're not just going, well, hey, mm-hmm. You know, it was fun, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, I mean, building on that, I agree with everything that Sam said. I think the U.S. is essentially at that point now. They don't want to be that nation that, oh, we battled 1-0 and lost. Like, they want to draw or win every game, like every other top nation does. And I know we, like, want to set precedents, and I know I'm going a little bit backwards towards Berhalter, but we need the mentality that someone like Bruce Arena had during the 2002 World Cup. When they went in to play, no one thought they were going to beat Portugal with Luis Figo. Arena put two nobodies to guard Luis Figo, and Figo did nothing. Like, Figo literally, Arena said it on CBS, their talk show the other day. Or the other week, talking about how he's like, oh, you thought that guy was good? Now wait for this guy to mark you. Like, you need to have that type of mentality. And especially with this unit that they have, like, there's only 3 MLS players that are on the U.S. roster for this tournament. Like, everyone else is overseas. So you can't make the argument, like, you can't go on Twitter and say, oh, the U.S. is building players that don't fit their system, or, oh, it's MLS, the league's behind. None of these players are in MLS. And all these MLS players that are on the roster, one of them's a goalie that's not going to play. The other one, I believe, is a center back. I think it's Walker. No, not Walker Zimmerman. One of them's a center back, I'm pretty sure, that isn't going to play at all either. Yep. And the other one's a midfielder, Shaq Moore from Nashville. Think that's correct.
Yeah, Shaq.
Shaq's not going to play either. Like, these MLS players are not going to play, if at all, in this tournament. If they do, they'll maybe play a combined 5 minutes. Maybe.
Right. That's like saying, hey, you know, Celtics not going to win an NBA championship with Jordan Walsh. You know, it's just not going to happen.
You know? He had the greatest ratio of dunk to playing minutes of all time in NBA.
That's
true. At a point.
Yeah. All right, Sam. So, you know, speaking of the players that they have, most of which are you know based out of Europe. If you had to pick one player that you think really needs to take big steps forward in this tournament, and then one player that if the U.S. is going to do anything, has to perform. So, a player that has to perform, and a player that you'd like to see, emerge and really kind of break out of what they've done to this point.
Yeah, I would say I don't think it'll be surprising that a player like Christian Pulisic has to come out, and I think he has to, you know, be dominant. And I think you're able to kind of see that in the Brazil game with him being able to get that goal. He's coming off a great season with AC Milan. So I think especially just seeing his role in the United States system, I think he kind of has to be that guy moving forward. And, you know, he has been that, but I think he just has to continue to prove that, you know, he is the main man for the United States kind of moving forward. I'm really interested to see, obviously, I think a lot of people will be, in terms of Gio Reyna, seeing his involvement, seeing how he's able to perform. It was really interesting seeing him go to Nottingham Forest, leaving Dortmund. And I think, obviously, some time has passed, and, you know, there is the whole incident. There is the whole everything with him and Greg Berhalter and the Reyna family. But I do think that he really needs to show that he belongs to be on the roster, that, you know, he is this player who can make an impact and really be the key moving forward. You know, I do think, you know, a lot of Res fans will want to see what Matt Turner is able to do. He's kind of had some fumbles in terms of just distribution, turnovers, and what may be. But definitely in that Brazil game was able to come back and really have a big performance. So I'm really interested to see what those guys can do. And I think, obviously, in total, just that number nine position, the striker position up top, they can't just rely on Pulisic to get goals, even though they need him to constantly show up. So seeing what Balogun, Pepe, Sargent can do.
Caleb, same thing. Who absolutely has to perform if they're going to do anything? And who would you like to see, you know, really, really kind of break out over the next month?
I think it's difficult to throw all of the pressure on Christian Pulisic, especially with where he stands in this roster. He's the captain at this point. It's either him or Adams. I think he's a hold stand for this roster. He'll be here regardless in the World Cup, unless he's injured. He's in this roster. So you expect him to perform. He should do well. My focus going into this entire tournament is the forwards. I'm looking at this list of players: Fuller and Balogun, Ricardo Pepi, Josh Sargent, Tim Weah, Haji Wright. Those four names one of them needs to prove themselves in this tournament. Because looking in, they're, in my opinion, those four, two of them are on the outside looking in for this World Cup. Easily. If they don't have a good tournament and then go back to their clubs in the next season and fail to produce, they will not be called up for the World Cup. They will not. And you also have to take into account players like Daryl Dike, he's been injured, but he was a player that was given a ton of praise that to be the new U.S. striker. So my main focus on this World Cup is really on these role players or players that have not solidified a name for themselves to make a name for themselves. And I know a lot of them have experience with the U.S. men's national team, but one of these guys needs to stand out. Adding to that, a player like Austin Trusty and Serginho Dest, they were both not selected. One wasn't selected just because, the other one's injured. So you have to look towards players like Christopher Lund and what he offers to this team. Mark McKenzie, if he's going to be in this team during the World Cup. Joe Scally, he's been getting a lot of slack recently. Then you look at the midfield, like players like Johnny Cardoso from Real Betis. He literally was given this opportunity because of how well he's done in Spain. So there's a lot of these players that are built in this roster that you're not taking out unless they're hurt. but there's also a good portion of them that are on the outside looking in and need to prove themselves. And I know Sam mentioned quickly on the goalkeepers with Turner and his distribution. He's another player that, I mean, you need to see improvement from him. He's not playing with Nottingham right now. His distribution has been very poor as of late. He is the reason why Brazil scored, no doubt about that. And you have a player like Ethan Horvath, who's with Cardiff, and Sean Johnson, an MLS keeper, that are fighting for playing time. On the top of that, with Drake Callender with Miami, who wasn't selected, as well as Zach Steffen, who wasn't selected. So the goalkeeper position as well is somewhere that there's names that are playing games consistently that are going to look to take their spots. So in the short, long spiel, to make it short, Pulisic needs to perform. One of the forwards need to perform. I think it's going to be Balogun. And overall, I think this team has a lot of players that need to prove themselves.
Yeah, you know, on Turner, like Sam, he's not really done well since he's gone to England. I think that's safe to say. He went to Arsenal. People got really excited, you know, but I mean, it kind of just looks like, you know, Tottenham does the same thing. Occasionally they'll just buy an American player. People get really excited. They sell a ton of jerseys. He goes out on loan and then he disappears. You know, then he goes to Forest. Didn't do so. Like, let me put it this way. Can the United States of America, with Matt Turner in goal, make a quarterfinal of a World Cup?
I would say yes, but it depends on what Matt Turner you're getting. If you're getting
Matt Turner, the one that has bad feet, they can't pass a ball. That one.
I think if we were to, if you allow me to time travel to the Matt Turner that was headed to Arsenal in that season, and just how hot he was, mostly because of how much he was playing, I think you can make it in the quarterfinal. If we're looking at Matt Turner right now, I can't with 100% certainty say, you know, he would be able to play a part in that, just because when it comes to his lack of playing time, when it comes to what he's doing in that playing time, it just isn't enough for him to be like, all right, this is our number one goalkeeper, and there is no one who can absolutely usurp him in that role. At this point, you know, you do have other keepers. Zach Steffens in MLS, it'll be interesting to see how that goes, but obviously wasn't selected. Sean Johnson is able to stand on his head when he plays Newman Revolution, but don't know if he's that goalkeeper who's going to get you there. Ethan Horvath, you know, he's been kind of bouncing around, and, you know, you have young guys, you know, like Gaga Slonina, but is he ready to play for the U.S. men's national team? So it seemed like the United States was in a perfectly fine place, but now I think they really need to kind of reevaluate the goalkeeping position. And I think Matt Turner, you know, kind of, you know, like he was mentioning, he needs to prove that he does deserve to keep that number one spot and, you know, kind of, again, you know, make that statement that he can still perform. And, you know, we even heard it. The Athletic was reporting that he can make a move back to MLS. How will that affect his potential to, you know, get U.S. Men's National Team minutes? It will probably be good for him to get those consistent minutes. But then you just have kind of the internal strife, if you will. So I would say right now you need more from Matt Turner, and I don't know if he would necessarily be able to give you that result. But if you're able to get Matt Turner at his full potential, I do think you can make a run with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's tough to go in these big tournaments with a goalkeeper that hasn't been playing in a regular, or I mean, anyone really, but certainly the goalkeeper. And then, you know, I do feel like the center forward position is something that, anytime I hear anyone talk about the team, it's like, yeah, they gotta get this nailed down. They seem to have plenty of guys to choose from, but I think that's also kind of the problem, right? No one has emerged and been like, oh, okay, we're going with this guy. Sounds like the striker problem that the local team has as well. But anyway, we'll save that for we get 80 Veroni questions a weekend, so I'm a little Veroni'd out right now. All right,
glad to have him in my goal scorer draft.
Yeah, you're cruising away now. Yeah,
last place.
Yeah, you should do a yellow card draft next year. You
know, boom,
Matt Polster. Polster.
Yeah,
Polster. You know me.
Oh God! All right, this is a Matt Polster free podcast. Should okay, so look, this tournament is taking place in the United States, which is great if you live in the United States. It was great when it was here the last time. It was great to go to Gillette Stadium and see, I believe it was Peru against Brazil. You know, that was a great atmosphere. It's great for us to be able to see these games and see these teams come here. But should this be happening? Should the top South American international tournament being played in North America? Sam, what do you, as someone that, you know, as somewhat of an allegiance to one of these teams, it's great for you, but for the Brazilians that reside in Brazil, is it really fair that they're, you know, this marquee tournament gets moved a couple thousand miles away to a different continent?
Is it fair? No, it is not fair, but I think it just kind of goes down to what, you know, the global soccer landscape is nowadays, and it's kind of chasing the money wherever you can get it from. I mean, if you look at it, the Spain Super Cup being played in Saudi, if you look at, you know, various, you know, English Premier teams coming to the United States for preseason and, you know, maybe even potentially playing regular season Premier League games in the United States. It's just all about being able to capitalize on markets and kind of being able to make as much money as you can. And obviously, if you're able to bring a tournament like Copa, for example, to the United States, that's a big money-making opportunity. That could be a huge money-making opportunity in terms of leading into the World Cup. Obviously, you're going to get those traveling fans who are able to get here. You're going to be able to get them from, you know, all across the continent. But I do think it is quite interesting. It would have been interesting to me to see the United States have to play in a nation like Brazil or Argentina or what have you, and kind of see how they're able to do. You know, they could still, and maybe quite reasonably possible, would be playing in front of some away crowds per se. But you do kind of have to get that feel of what's it like to be in a stadium with a lot of people rooting against you and wanting you to lose, and kind of being able to build, you know, that thick skin or just that mindset of being able to go into an arena like that and pull off a win. So I would definitely say it's not fair, and it just kind of talks about this, what global soccer is now, kind of dominated by the financial aspect of everything.
Yeah. So Caleb, what do you think? I mean, I pretty clearly agree with Sam that, money and capitalism's endless search for money pretty much ruins everything. But do you have a different take? Do you look at maybe the brighter side of this tournament being played in North America, even though it's a South American tournament?
I mean, it's kind of difficult. It kind of adds sort of not like a Champions League type feel of the tournament, or like a Euro feel. Like the Euros, it's being played in Germany. Each stadium is like 500 miles away from each other, maybe even closer than that. It's an estimate. For the U.S., for this tournament, some of these stadiums are 4,000 miles away from each other. Yeah. So I feel like this kind of supports these South American teams just a little bit, or these teams that are in the Copa America that want to play in the World Cup as well, because it gets them kind of ready for, like, hey, we're traveling a lot potentially in this tournament. So, yes, does revenue matter? Yes. Does fan interest matter? Yes. Is that involved in this whole conversation? Yes. Is it fair to these South American teams? Absolutely not. Is it good for the game to be in another country? 100%. But I don't know. It's kind of a hard one to look at. Money talks. That's kind of really the nicest way to put it. It's money talks, and it's the United States. Like, everyone wants to live here. All the greatest athletes of every sport, bear soccer, play here. So it's kind of like inviting the market, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. First of all, I actually probably would prefer to live in Canada at this point. it is, these teams are, you know, what, five of them, six of them from South America? They're going to be back here in 2 years' time anyway. So for them, purely from a, you know, you're bringing up a good point. This is something that they're going to have to get used to. That you know, like you said, traveling across Germany, you know, that's no problem. Traveling across the United States, you know, even on a chartered flight, it's no picnic. So I think there's, you know, it makes sense why the teams said yes. I'm sure it's not difficult to understand that the South American Federation can do math and see that there's more money to be made here than there is there. So that kind of puts them in a bit of a bind. But where do you think this goes, Sam? Do you think because FIFA's been talking about allowing or considering to allow, domestic leagues to play actual games abroad. So you think all this stuff is going to build towards something like, the Euros? What if the 2032 Euros? What if the U.S. puts a bid in? Do you think that this is the direction it's headed in?
I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, it seems like it could be that way, even though it would probably not make as much sense to me to have a tournament like the Euros compared to Copa America, at least just logistic-wise and kind of distance-wise. But I do think, and it comes
a lot of fun.
It would be fun. It would be fun. I wouldn't hate it. But if you look at, teams from the English Premier League coming over for domestic, regular season games, or maybe the Bundesliga or La Liga, that definitely seems like it could be more likely, and you could see that coming. I don't know if we'll get the Euros making its way here, but I do think more kind of European and more just kind of soccer nations are going to see the United States as a landscape to kind of build that fan engagement, and then also to obviously make more money. So I do think you're going to see more teams that maybe haven't played in the United States start playing, a few games here or there in the United States.
Sure. And Kale, do you think this could lead to other things as well? What about a European Champions League final in China? What about an FA Cup final in Japan? A lot of Premier League teams, they finish up their season and they go and play games in South Korea. They go to Australia. So do you think this is kind of the direction that we're headed in? Because if you look, you can see the NFL, they play a game in Germany. It's a big deal. They sell it out. If they play in England, big deal, sell it out. Major League Baseball plays games abroad. And these teams all learn from each other. They say, oh, hey, look at that. They did that and they made a bunch of money. Maybe we could make a bunch of money ourselves. So, Caleb, where do you see all this going? And do you think it's for the benefit of the game? Or is this going to, just continue to erode away whatever it is that we used to like about soccer?
I think it's beneficial for the game. It allows the game to grow in certain locations. For example, the U.S. I would love for a Conference League, Europa League, and Champions League final in the same season to take place in three different parts of the United States. That'd be unreal.
You want to take all of them.
If you put all three in three different parts of the United States, not only will that flock a ton of European teams and interest and eyes, but it would also bring revenue. Imagine a game, one's at MetLife, because it's going to go at MetLife anyways. One's at Jerry World, because everything's going to go down in Jerry World in Dallas. And then the other one's in Vegas. That's cool. That'd be cool for the environment, or for this landscape for the U.S. Not only will it grow the game, but it'll be good for those markets to see, Americans care about soccer. Because a long-running joke is, oh, you guys call it soccer, it's football, but no, we care. We really do care. I think that you start with those. I mean, it's an exaggeration to call it a smaller competition. I don't want to see the Euros take place in America or the Euros take place in China. It's not the Euros. Copa America, at least it's America. We are North America.
It's three. Yeah.
Long stretch. like stretching hard. But I do not want to see a Euros take place in a different continent.
Now, Sam,
we're stretching it, but
oh no, hold on. No, you bring up a good point. Alaska is part of North America, and the short distance to Russia, which plays in Europe. So, there it is. It's really not that big of a deal. It's actually just a couple of miles, right? What's the distance between Russia and Alaska? It's like a 10-minute flight. So, or if we go back in time far enough, all this land was connected at one point. So,
You got me there, Tom.
Let's just move everything. 55 miles.
Russia to Alaska.
I drove 55 miles today, and I didn't leave Massachusetts. On the basket.
Yeah, you got me there, Tom. And you won.
You're right, but I think we start with those.
Start small, yeah.
But even calling the Conference League, the Europa League, and the Champions League small is like crazy. Like,
No one cares about the Europa League unless your team's in it.
That's mean.
Hey, it's Tottenham. Hey, look.
Poor Liverpool.
I'm a Tottenham fan. There are Tottenham fans that turn their nose up at the Europa League, which is hysterical because they've not won anything in Europe since 1984. But I know what you mean. I think occasionally it's okay. Especially, look, there is a large diaspora of a lot of European countries in North America, right? There's a lot of Italians, there's a lot of Irish people, there's a lot of English people, Spanish people, occasionally I think it would make sense. But yeah, I don't know. Let me do it this way. If I was Italian and I found out that the European Championship was going to North America, my opinion of Americans, however low it was already, would tank. I think I'd go the opposite way. I wouldn't like, oh, wow, they really care. They care so much, they stole our tournament. Yeah. Anyway, we could probably talk about global soccer and how it consumes and ultimately destroys everything, but really, we'd just be talking about capitalism, which is outside the scope of this podcast.
All right. I need Brownstone's thoughts on capitalism, actually. So
he's part of the machine, though. You know, if you know what he does in his real job.
Aren't we all, Tom?
No, I work for a public school system. We can't make money. Anyway, all right, we're getting off track here. God, where are we? All right, let's talk about Canada again, right? Our good friends from Canada. Jesse Marsh. So Jesse Marsh is now coaching the Canadian national team. So my first question, and Kale, we'll go to you and then go straight to Sam. Is this the job that Jesse Marsh wants, or is it the one that was available?
I think it's the one that was available, to be honest with you. I think he wanted the U.S. job 100%. And I think he even stated that as well. The U.S. Mm-hmm. He was in talks with the U.S., and they weren't so polite with him. And what's the next best thing? Canada. Woo! So, kind of a tough one, but I mean, the argument of like Canada, like a lot of people that I've spoken to is wondering, they wonder if they can get to the next steps under Marsh, and if that they can finally do something in a tournament with the rest of the world watching. I mean, if you look at Canada in the world rankings, like just to give a scope real quick, the U.S. is 11th. Mexico is 14th. How the heck is Canada 49th?
They're 49th?
49th in the world at Canada. They are 49th. If you're telling me that Mexico team is better than that Canada team, you are crazy. Crazy. Back to reality real quick. But Jesse Marsh got the job that was available. However, I don't think that he would go to any other thing. I think he was offered MLS jobs and club jobs, like regular club jobs, and I think he turned them down. I'm pretty sure 2 or 3 Serie A teams were looking to get him for a little bit. If I'm not mistaken, it was reported probably in like February. If I'm not, don't quote me on that. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm pretty sure I saw a report about it. And I think he held out because there was uncertainty on the U.S. job, and then you're Canada. It's there.
I mean, that's kind of the thing, though, right? I mean, it's there. They had, you know, as John Herdman continues his journey to coach every team in Canada, you know, the position came open. And, I mean, it's not a bad idea, right? Just to be, you know, right next door and maybe showing the U.S., you know, what they, you know, what they're potentially missing out on. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, it's got to be tough to work your way through the Red Bull system. You get to the Bundesliga, you get bounced after like 3 months. There was some criticism that his German wasn't very good, even after he spent a season in Germany, 2 years in Austria. So maybe trying to take up Italian wasn't wasn't something he was really too interested in. But now, you know, he got fired at Leeds trying to replace the greatest coach's coach of all time. And, you know, do you really want to come back to MLS, Sam, at his career stage? You know, coming back to MLS, that couldn't have been that couldn't have been the right step for him.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like he was someone who wanted that kind of international job, or he was going to be perfectly fine just kind of staying in that under role. And, you know, I do just want a slight correction, Tom. He is the MLS Canada men's national team.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God. I forgot.
Yeah. So don't forget that lovely
get hammered.
That's yeah. So, but yeah, you know, similar to what Caleb said, it was definitely the job that was available. He would have loved to be the U.S. men's national team head coach, but, you know, he also did kind of mention the poor treatment that he did get. So I think it's interesting. And, you know, again, it's kind of similar to the United States, as Caleb said. You know, they have some really talented players, and, you know, you see that ranking, and it just seems like they should be performing better. You know, you have an Alphonso Davies, you have a Tejon Buchanan, Clyde Lahren, shout out to Seacoast United, you got Moise Gombito. Like, you have a lot of, you know, these talented players, and it's just kind of time for them to start performing. And the hope would be that Jesse March can kind of get them marching in the right direction.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, what do you think? What do you think a good tournament looks like for Canada?
Canada has I will say they have an easier path. They do have an easier path than the United States does. In the group stage, they have Argentina, Peru, and Chile, or Chile. Sorry. I think Canada gets out of the group. When they get out of the group, they're either going to play Mexico, Ecuador, or Jamaica. I don't think Venezuela makes it out of the group. I think they bottom that group. I think they have an easier path. So with that, I think Canada goes quite far in this tournament. I think they potentially could go further than the United States. However, in my prediction, I do not have that. And we'll get into that a little later. I think Canada gets at least two. They're going to make it out of the group. They're going to get past the round of 16. I think they're going to have a good tournament.
Yeah, similar to what Caleb said, I'm too also expecting, you know, some positive things from Canada. Like you mentioned, the group they should be able to get out of. And I think, you know, maybe, you know, Jamaica could be the toughest squad they face in kind of that first knockout game. And, you know, Jamaica's kind of an interesting place as well, too, for them, their national team-wise. You've also heard just the internal strife in terms of payment and kind of the treatment of the national team players, men's and women's. So in general, I think, you know, Canada could possibly make it to that final four. Now, obviously, if they make it, they'd probably face a team like Argentina. No offense, I do not think Alphonso Davies is going to be locking up Lionel Messi. Could, though. You never know.
He's
he is quite good, possibly headed to Real Madrid. But I do think Argentina, just the overall talent they have, will overpower them. But like Caleb said, I think there is maybe even a good chance that Canada could surpass the United States in terms of performance this tournament.
I just want to add lightly before, I know you just said captain-wise, Alphonso Davies is named captain. I think that is a horrible decision by the Canada men's national team. I do not think that he should be named captain of that group.
Who should be captain?
Kind of building on that, I'm going to go back to it in one second. Hercules Gomez.
The guy. I get why they would name him Captain. He's the guy, you know.
Hercules Gomez commented on it. Steven, I can't say
Eustaquio.
Eustaquio, I believe he's been named captain of this group. He was named vice captain of the group. I think he got hard done by for sure. And I think they just did what the U.S. did and gave, oh, that's our best player, captain. And I just, my personal opinion as well with the U.S., Pulisic should not be captain. It should be Tyler Adams or even Matt Turner. But that's my own personal opinion.
It's captain stuff. I mean, Italy just gives it to the guy with the most caps. Seems to work out pretty well for them. Now, one thing that has not been mentioned, and it causes me great physical pain to even mention this, former UConn alumni and star player Kyle Larin. Does the United States have anyone at the forward position on Kyle Larin's level?
Yeah, I would probably have to say I would give Balogun the shout there.
I think Balogun is a better player than him.
Who's a better goal scorer? No one cares about better player, better goal scorer.
I think Balogun as well. Balogun had a great year on loan. He was at, where did he go? He was at Reims for 2022 to 2023. In 37 games, he scored 21 goals.
Yes.
And then
French league talk.
Don't hate on the
bunch of Bombers.
Yeah, and then he went to Monaco, and in that system, obviously, you're not the guy. You just won't be the guy in that system. But he still scored 7 in 29.
How many did Kyle Larin score last year?
I can find out. Give me 1 second.
It's probably.
I don't know if he scored as many as that from him. I
mean, he did go to UConn, so.
Kyle Larin for Mallorca last year scored 3 in 35. However, the year before, he was on loan while at Club Bruges. He went to Real Valladolid, where he scored 8 in 19.
That's pretty good.
So, mathematically, Balogun is the better scorer.
Yeah, and arguably, though.
Unbelievable.
Come on, Tom.
No, I just like Kyle Larin for no reason at all whatsoever. I just always liked him.
Orlando City.
No, but and he went to UConn. Ray Reed was a great coach there, as are all the coaches at UConn except for one.
Whoa.
lost my train of thought. Well, what about Alfonso Davies? You put the U.S., you put the Canadian team together. Is Alfonso Davies the best player?
It is close. It is close. I mean, I would probably still, basically because I'm born here, give Christian Pulisic the tie goes to the runner in that sense. But I do think it's close. It's getting closer, especially if Davies is able to make that move to Real Madrid and not just kind of be like, hey, similar to Turner, hey, I'm going to Arsenal and this is great. If he's able to go to Real Madrid and really perform well, that would be great.
Playing in the Champions League every year, yeah.
But since I was born in these United States, I will give the tie goes to the runner, Christian Pulisic.
Yeah, well, I don't know where you were born, but what do you think?
So I was born on the South Shore of Weymouth, Massachusetts. I am a Hanover resident through and through, and live in Boston. So I'm a Masshole through and through. I love Alfonso Davies. However, he is not even the best player on Canada. He is not. He's just not. The best player on Canada wasn't even born in Canada. It's Jonathan David, born in Brooklyn, New York. Jonathan David's the best player in Canada, without a shadow of a doubt. Alfonso Davies, yeah, he had a great career so far. He's played in Vancouver. He got the shock move to Bayern Munich, but cool. Jonathan David is from Brooklyn, played in Ghent, scored 30 goals in 60 games, and then went to Lille and has played 146 games and has 71 goals. That is a goal scorer. He is probably the best player in all of CONCACAF.
No.
I would 100%. Who would you argue?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just trying to make a conversation.
You mean a podcast,
Thomas? A podcast.
I'm hosting a podcast, yeah.
I mean, I would say Jonathan David versus Christian Pulisic is a better comparison. I would say those are the top two.
I would take Pulisic. As much as I love Jonathan David, and
he made goals though, don't you?
See, I like the argument about Pulisic. The issue is, I don't know how much Jonathan David provides. Pulisic provides. He's a goal scorer, but he also kills it on distribution. I think he had, 14 assists last year?
He tore it up.
He had more than that. He may have had more than that. If you do...
I think David's underrated. I definitely think he's a very talented striker, and I don't know for what reason he just doesn't get that kind of proper grading. But I do think that no matter what, if you kind of go back to the question you asked Tom for the United States, who has to perform and who needs to be that guy, as much as, you know, an outside back or winger might not necessarily be relied on that much, if Alphonso Davies doesn't show up, I don't know if Canada is going to have a good Copa and have a good World Cup. So I think he's still that guy who needs to kind of stir the drink per se. But, you know, Canada does have some, you know, very talented players outside of Davies. You know, obviously Davies gets all the shine. Rez fans will then deflect that over to Tejon Buchanan. But even outside of that, there's some very talented players who are coming up in this Canada system. And, you know, compared to prior years, they really seem to be making an impact and kind of improving the overall status of the nation, even though they're still, you know, quite low in that FIFA ranking.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Farmers Leagues and Bruges and Ghent and Limes and whatever? You know, he's moved over to Inter Milan. Caleb, actually, I think it was you, Caleb. You were like, oh, he's a Serie A champion. It's like,
yeah.
Jordan Walsh, and Jordan Walsh is an NBA champion too, isn't he?
Jordan Walsh, again, has the best dunk percentage in NBA history per minute played.
Brian Scalabrine is the first kid that he got the game-winning shot in that in finals.
Yeah, he won the MVP in 2008.
Yep. But yeah, look, I love Buchanan, so I'd be excited to see him play. Yeah. I haven't been able to see too much of him since he's gone over to Europe. So, but look, you know, this is kind of the larger point, though, right? How important is it, Cale? We'll go to you first on this one. You know, how important is it for the United States that Canada, that we're even able to have? You know, we wouldn't even be able to have this type of conversation about Canada, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So how important is it that Canada continues to get better and better because they're in CONCACAF along with the U.S. and Mexico is going through, you know, possibly one of their worst spells.
Well, I think the U.S. and Canada were very smart, both of them tactically. I mean, it's not wrong to say that come 15, 20 years ago, Mexico was a better nation than us in the football world. It was just no shadow of a doubt. However, over the last 20 years, those players that were playing 20 years ago are still playing for this Mexico team. Jeremy Ochoa is, 40-something at this point? I don't even know how old he is, but I'm pretty sure he played in the 2006 World Cup. Like, he is ancient. I think this is the first time he's not in this Mexican squad. So, I mean, it's kind of difficult. Like I said earlier, like, the U.S. is ranked 11th, Mexico's 14th, Canada 49th. It's just wrong. It just is wrong. I think Canada are a better team than Mexico. I think Jamaica are a better team than Mexico. So, I think it's good to see that Canada and the United States are improving at a level to the fact that European competition, as well as some South American competition, want to play them. However, for both of these nations to continue improving, they need to keep playing the best teams. Canada just played France. They got a draw. U.S. just played Brazil. Somehow, they got a draw. That's a somehow for both of them. But for these nations to keep being at the level that they're at, they need to keep playing the Frances, the Germanys, the Portugals, not Lithuania and Luxembourg, okay? We're not stat padding here. And with the Copa America now, they're going to get competition against the Brazils, the Uruguays, the Argentinas. So they're getting a glimpse of it. However, over these next, I'm going to say year and a half, because we're going to count the Copa and then we'll have two or three more windows of international friendlies, they need to play top competition. I do not want to see the U.S. or Canada play against Chile or play against Ghana. Like, go play Germany. Go play Spain. And when I mean go, literally go. Don't play them here. Go there. Play in a hostile environment. Like, I know there's, like, Serbia is not a strong nation. It's awful playing there. Horrible. They are brutal to opposing teams. Go to that environment. Go to the trenches and experience that. And both of those teams will improve by playing better competition over time.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, you get those opportunities. Like, you, aside from 2026, right, you've got a Gold Cup every 2 years. You've got to go through qualifying for a World Cup every 4 years, except for the next one, right, Sam? So, like, Canada being good, like, to be honest, like, you know, half the time, like, every time the Gold Cup comes around, I say, okay, like, what is the point of watching the Gold Cup? It's just a procession for the U.S. to get to the final along with Mexico, and then one or the other wins. Yippee. I could probably just watch something else. So is it critically important for both these teams that they both continue to be good and to continue to improve, because these are the teams that you know, you have to play them, right? You have to play them because you're in the same confederation.
Yeah, it's kind of that adage, you know, rising tides lift all boats. And I think if you're able to have it not just be United States and Mexico, if you're able to have Canada continue to grow, if you're able to have Jamaica continue to grow, all these different other nations, you know, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, whoever it may be, if you're able to have all these nations grow in terms of soccer ability, it's just going to make it easier in terms of, you know, improving yourself as a soccer nation. You know, the matches will be harder, but I think if you're able to continue to grow, continue to face tougher competition, not have to, you know, necessarily fly to Europe to get tough competition. If you're able to continue to kind of build up that competition in CONCACAF, it'll help in the, you know, the instances where the United States is, or, you know, United States, Canada, Mexico isn't hosting a World Cup. You don't have to, you're still able to get those competitive qualifying matches without, you know, having to think of, oh, should we be scheduling some intense friendlies in between all of this? So I think it's very good to see Canada continue to progress. It almost seems like Mexico is kind of inverting the United States and Canada, where it just seems like they're kind of in a tailspin right now. Really need to kind of find some domestic talent, make sure that domestic talent isn't choosing to go to the United States, for example, or any other nation, and really just kind of improving their overall footballing ability and getting back to what Mexico used to be. Because as Caleb mentioned, they've kind of fallen behind in terms of the United States and Canada, I would say. So it's going to be interesting, but I think it's great to see not just it be United States and Mexico, see Canada get involved. I think Jamaica's improving, kind of seeing these other nations improve.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of inverted tailspins, Brazil are currently sixth in World Cup qualifying through six rounds. So, Sam, can you give us a little bit there as to why the Brazilian national team might be finding themselves so far down in the World Cup qualifying table?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they have that forward talent. I mean, I don't have to go over Vinny Jr., Rodrigo, you have Gabriel Martinelli on the bench, you have a youngster like Endrick playing well. You have all this attacking talent, and then I would say in goalkeeper, you're really set. You have an Allison, you have an Ederson, you're all set. I would say midfield is probably the most important position right now. You know, you do have Bruno Guimarães, you have a Douglas Luiz, you have various midfielders, but it just seems like none of them are really the straw that stirs the drink. You have a Lucas Paqueta. I mean, he's also involved in a betting scandal, so it'll be interesting to see what his status is moving forward.
As usually go well.
I mean, you know, yeah, exactly. But I really think the midfield is going to be the key. You know, if Bruno Guimarães is able to all of a sudden just turn it up and be an absolute magician in there, or Douglas Luiz, whoever it may be, I think you'll be fine. I think if you look at their back line, it's pretty solid. You got Marquinhos, Eder Militao. You really do have some quality defending. I just, that midfield, it seems to be a bit of a downgrade at the moment. I think if you're able to have a real solid midfield, Brazil would be churning along like it has for most of soccer history. But if they're able to get that midfield going, that's going to be the key for them, because you have the attack of talent, you have the goalkeeping. It's really the midfield that stands out.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Caleb, I guess it would have been easier for Brazil if they had actually tempted Carlo Ancelotti to stop winning the Champions League and come over to Brazil and fix everything over there. But, you know, that notwithstanding, what do you think Brazil needs to do in this tournament to, you know, get themselves back on track? Or do you think they won't be able to get themselves back on track?
Just a quick word before that. Carlo Ancelotti is at the Brazil camp, but he's just trying to find more youngsters to pull to Real Madrid. That's just how it works. I mean, kind of like how Sam said, this Copa America squad is so different. I mean, it's not different, but there are pieces missing from this recent World Cup squad 2 years ago. You think about it. In this midfield, they don't have Casemiro. They don't have Fabinho. Again, you said Lucas Paqueta is involved in the betting scandal, right?
Yeah, he's currently the national team. I don't think it's affecting anything, but I would keep an eye on that.
Yeah, so he's, if you look at the national team midfield from the World Cup to now, you only have Lucas Ferreira and you have Bruno Guimarães. Other than that, there's a lot of new guys here. You got Andres Ferreira, who, I mean, that's not great. Douglas Luiz, who's, again, not great. Joao Gomes, not great. Pepe from Porto and Ederson from Atalanta. That is a weak midfield. Like, there are so many gaps to the point where I would take Marquinhos at center back and put him in midfield. That's how bad their midfield is. Even building on that, I would put Eder Militao in the midfield and play a weak back line because you could go with four outside backs that are stronger than this midfield. There's also key names missing from this Brazil team. They don't have Neymar. Neymar has been out the whole year, essentially, with a torn ACL. So what he brings to this team as well is missing. Brazil needs a lot of work. However, it's CONMEBOL. The top 16s qualify regardless. I wouldn't be worried about Brazil. They'll figure it out. Neymar will get healthy. They'll find a 16-year-old Brazilian right now that in 2 years, he's going to be gross. So he'll probably be starting. That's how it works in Brazil. So I think they're going to go far in this tournament. They're going to be feared. They're going to be feared at the World Cup, too. I'm not shocked for Brazil. It's Brazil.
Yeah, Sam, you think, you know, there's just too much talent on the team and they can come through the team that they'll, you know, they'll get themselves back up to where they should be?
Yeah, I mean,
this is pretty rare, right? I mean, Brazil's struggling.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I think some of it can come down to kind of the questions that head coach, obviously, Gigi, left after, I believe, the World Cup. So basically the managerial aspect of it, that does play a role, but I think it's just finding that midfield talent. And if you look at it just specifically for this tournament, you have Vinny Jr., you have Rodrigo, you have these star players, they're going to be able to get it done. You know, even if they have to make the move of moving a Marquinhos into the midfield, that's something that he's done before. He's done it at PSG. So I think even if they have to make drastic changes to order to kind of make sure that, you know, strikers, forwards are getting the ball, receiving it in the right places, they'll be able to figure it out. Spoiler alert, I think to get into the finals, I probably think they're winning it all, just mostly because I'm rooting for Brazil and because my wife's Brazilian and I don't want her mad at me. But I am looking at, you know, not to get too far ahead, this Argentina squad is going to give them a run for their money for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Caleb, speaking of, you know, teams that have plenty of talent to kind of figure it out, right? Messi appears to be in you know, relatively good form. He has managed not to fall apart so far, playing for Inter Miami and you know, playing in the Champions Cup and 27 friendlies in preseason. So is Argentina, should we just go ahead and put them straight into the final against somebody else?
I can confidently say I do have Argentina in the final. However, I have them losing. I do not have them winning the tournament. Argentina is a strong side. I did make a prediction on Twitter where I have Messi as the top scorer in this tournament. However, I think a lot of the fact a lot of that is due to the fact that I think this Argentina team is going to get fouled a lot. They go to ground quite easily. I think Messi's going to score a lot of free kicks, a lot of penalties in this tournament. I think he scores 6 or 7 goals for this Argentina squad in this tournament. All around, they have a strong team. I think their weakest points, which is shocking to say, is their center backs. Like, they have Christian Romero and Lisandro Martinez, who are also rocks. Like, their team is great. They have Emi Martinez. Their center backs are great. Acuna and Tagliafico are going to be on the outside backs. Your midfield is probably going to be a combination of Rodrigo De Paul, McAllister, and Paredes. And then you look at a front three, you have probably Julian Alvarez or Lautaro Martinez up top, and then it's Messi, and you get to hand pick either Angel Di Maria or Alejandro Garnacho or Valentin Carboni. Like, they have a lot of, they have multiple choices essentially to come off of this bench or as well as start for this team. They're a strong side, but I'm not gonna lie, I'm not too afraid. Like, I don't, people overhype Argentina because of Messi, and people overhype Portugal because of Ronaldo. It's the same thing. I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, yeah, they're the defending World Cup champs. I don't think that they got, I don't think they deserve that World Cup either. They got a lot of calls.
Yes, for me.
They went,
Messi was put on this earth by God to do that. But anyway,
yeah, you're also talking to a huge Ronaldo fan about Messi. So long day there.
God,
long day there. But I think Uruguay and Brazil stand in their way. I think that's a big issue.
Can Ronaldo even come to America? By the way, is he?
Yes.
Is he okay to do that now?
Yeah. This is breaking news, Caleb. He is.
Yes, he can.
You make it through airport security.
Guys are awful. He should just avoid. He should avoid Las Vegas.
I'm just simply stating that at one point. He was in
Neymar. Neymar can't either. Neymar was advised that too. He's been coming here a lot.
Neymar.
Yeah. You want to talk about scandals? We'll talk Neymar.
Well, I mean, Neymar really loves his family. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. He's so much so that he's gambling.
That's his tax sheet anyway. So what the hell's the difference?
Oh, go ahead, Jim.
I was going to say, Tom, have you seen the video that we're talking about or no?
Oh, no, probably not.
It was Neymar's kid's birthday, and they're singing happy birthday, and he's literally got roulette open while they're singing happy birthday, and he's spinning the roulette wheel on, like, stake, just gambling all his money.
But yeah, to Caleb's point, I do think that, and kind of what you mentioned with the United States, I think Garnacho's the player I'm most excited to see what he's able to do, really excited to see what he can do on the international stage. Obviously, had kind of a breakout year with Manchester United. And then, you know, when you look at the center backs, you know, Otamendi's been a guy for so long, but he's just 36 years old. And you kind of have the newer guys of Lisandro Martinez. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the center backs perform. But again, I think they have the talent. I think they're probably overall the strongest roster. And, you know, I do think they get to the final quite easily. Are, you know, they're able to do well. So they're the team to beat, I would say. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, even though I think Brazil can get it done, because I love Brazil, if they can get it done.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, if they win Group A, you know, anybody coming out of Group B, Mexico, Ecuador, Venezuela, and Jamaica. So, I mean,
they're getting there.
I don't even know who the two that would come out of that group would even be in the first place. But yeah, so I mean, yeah, I think Argentina, look, I mean, they are, you know, fairly or unfairly the reigning World Cup champions. I think if, you know, if Christian Romero can keep his head and not kill anybody for, you know, the time it takes to get through this tournament, you know, he had a really good season with Tottenham once he got his head on straight, which took some time. So yeah, but look, what about the team that I will be most vehemently rooting for? Uruguay is, you know, they're flying high. Bielsa's doing what he does. He brings exciting, attacking, functional soccer, you know, and actually doesn't just say that those things are happening. Those things actually happen when he coaches a team. And he also doesn't flip out at people during press conferences. He actually very happily answers all the questions that he's asked. So, Sam, what do you think about Uruguay? Do you think that Bielsa here has a chance to deliver a Copa America to Uruguay and, you know, put another big achievement on his own personal career so that people stop criticizing him for not winning anything?
Yeah, I mean, and maybe in fear of retribution, I'm going to very much praise Marcelo Bielsa, but I don't know if they're going to be able to perform as well in terms of the tournament. I think a lot of it, again, if you want me to pinpoint one player, I think you're going to need a big performance from someone like Darwin Nunez. Obviously, he can be a bit of a polarizing topic in the English Premier League with his ability to score bangers and then seemingly miss shots from 12 inches out. But if he's able to really catch on fire, hit a purple patch in front of goal, I think that Uruguay can definitely make a run. Obviously, yeah, Brian Rodriguez, Luis Suarez, you have Manuel Ugarte from PSG, I'll give him a shout out. Bentancur from Tottenham, as you'll know, Tom. I do think there's some talented players on there, but I don't know if that quality, I think maybe in the midfield they can stand up with Brazil. And I think obviously in Argentina, it's going to be a battle, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they can do.
Hale, what do you think? Do you think
I would trash Uruguay?
Do you think El Loco is going to throw a hand grenade into this tournament and get Uruguay all the way to the final?
Sam Minton with some strong statements there. I have Uruguay winning the entire tournament.
Oh,
there we go. That's why I have you on.
You need to
all right.
So I have Uruguay beating Argentina in the final. This is a Uruguay team that's weakest point is probably their goalkeeper. That's it. Sounds like the United States. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. However, Sam completely forgot to mention Uruguay's best player.
Oh, I know. I did miss him. I know who exactly.
Federico Valverde is literally the best player on this roster.
Yep.
He's in the best form of his life. This back line is strong. They have Ronald Araujo from Barcelona. They have Jose Maria Jimenez from Atletico Madrid. You have two of the strongest center backs probably in La Liga next to each other. That is a strong, strong back line to start. I mean, your wing backs are not quite up to par, but to have those two rocks in your back line, that's a great start. If they do a 4-3-3, you're probably going to see Bentancur, Ugarte, and Valverde. I would assume that's your prediction there. But I also could see them doing like a 4-2-3-1 and just doing Ugarte. Totally butchering how you pronounce his name, and Bentancur, and then doing a 3-1, sort of like how the Reds play with a 4-2-3-1. And doing
hold on, please, don't mention the Revolution and Bielsa in the same. Oh my God!
No! Luis, I would assume Luis Suarez to be at the nine, Darwin Nunez to be on a wing. I could see them moving Federico Valverde into one of the wings, and then I could see, Brian Rodriguez, the Club America man that broke our hearts. I could see him center attacking mid in this squad, and they're going to play bully ball. This is going to be a team that is going to look scary. I really think their weakest points is their right and left back and their goalkeeper. Other than that, this is a strong team with a strong defensive counterattack with a good counterattack. The one concern I have, which all of MLS has had all year, is how is Luis Suarez going to perform? That's my worry. That's my real worry. If he starts, how long can he go? If he doesn't, how long can he go off the bench? I think if they do a single striker, it's going to be Suarez or Nunez. But if they include wingers, I think Nunez is on one of those wings with Valverde. I think this is a strong team. I really like them, but again, my only concern is their right back, left back, and goalkeeper.
Yeah, but they've got the best coach in the tournament, so, you know.
If only the coach could play, Tom. If only the coach could play.
Bielsa said actually it's the other way around, that if coaches were robots, he would never lose a game.
But I will say that apparently this potential Brazil Uruguay final is going to be known as the Sam Minton Caleb Pomerantz derby.
Oh God.
All right, we'll go through each group here. Who do you think is going to get out? So let's go through the groups first, and then we'll get to who we have in the final that we've kind of given away the end there. Group A is Argentina, Peru, Chile, and Canada. So Sam, we'll start with you. Who are the two that are going to come out, and who's going to win the group?
Yeah, I think you just kind of nailed it as you read it, possibly. So but definitely Argentina, Canada. I was more kind of joking there, but Argentina, Canada, I would say top two, obviously Argentina, top one.
Okay. Caleb?
Completely agree. Argentina winning the group, Canada in second.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the same thing, which obviously means it won't happen. But yeah, I'm going to go with Argentina and Canada. I think Canada finds a way to get through, and it would be a bit of a shock to see Argentina not come out of that group at the top. All right, Group B. Going to throw it right back to Caleb. You have the what'd you say? The flailing, descending Mexican national team, Ecuador, Venezuela, and Jamaica. So Caleb, who's coming out of that, and who's coming out on top?
I have Jamaica topping the group and Ecuador finishing second. I have Mexico not making out of the group and finishing third.
Sam, is Mexico going to get out of the group stage?
I'm really tempted, mostly because I don't want to say that I have the exact same thing as Caleb. But I do think Jamaica tops it. For contrarian's sake, give me Mexico. Well, let's really just make it all continental United States in the South American tournament. Give me Jamaica and Mexico.
Now I'm going to go with Venezuela and Ecuador, and Venezuela is going to top the group. And I don't know anything about any of those four teams, so that's why you got that one. But hey, who knows? You know, anything can happen. Mexico is a flailing, descending dead bird, so you know it should keep things interesting. All right, on to what is probably the main event for most people, Group C. I'm going to go with Uruguay, tops the group quite easily, and the United States manages to get through. Sam, who do you have coming out of Group C?
Yeah, I will not do this for contrarian's sake. I will completely agree with you, Tom. Uruguay tops the group. USA gets that second spot.
Hey, are you going to throw your own country out of this tournament, the group stage, or not?
This is a bold statement here. I have the United States winning the group on goal differential. I think they win.
Very specific.
I think we go to Uruguay and we play for the draw. I think we win on goal differential by having better results against Panama and Bolivia. USA wins the group. Uruguay finishes in second due to having a weaker goal differential.
All right. I mean, you know, Bielsa's system does, they do give up goals occasionally. So, all right. And Group D, Brazil, Colombia, Paraguay, and Costa Rica. I'm actually just going to go as it reads. Brazil is going to come out top of the group. Colombia is going to come out in second. Sam, there's no possible reason you could disagree with that, but go ahead and feel free if you want to.
Why would I disagree with that? You're an intelligent man, Tom. Nothing you could say could dissuade me from picking Brazil number one. So yeah, Brazil number one and Colombia number two.
Now, Caleb, I've picked Colombia on name recognition only. So do you have a more informed view and maybe don't have Colombia going through with Brazil?
No, I have Colombia totally. Colombia is for sure going through. I have Brazil in first, however, and Colombia in second. They have another strong team. I don't know how James Rodriguez starts for that team, but they still have a strong team.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, right? I mean, there's a group of South American teams that just seem to always be able to put 11 really good, you know, good quality players on the team no matter what. Okay, so then let's go straight through to the final. We'll skip the middle part because it's too complicated. And I think we've kind of already given this away. But again, Sam, for the benefit of your marriage, who do you have winning this tournament and who are they going to be?
I mean, if Brazil is not going to win this tournament, I want to be wrong saying that they are going to win this tournament. So, yes, I do have it being Brazil, Argentina. I do think they are able to get past a Uruguay in kind of that semi game. I definitely think it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a nitty gritty final. But if there's any team I want to be wrong about, it is Brazil, because at least I can say that I was wrong about them. But yeah, gonna take Brazil to win it all.
Caleb, who do you have taken the trophy back to where it should be in South America, or is it going to stay here in North America?
Mm-hmm. So I have Uruguay over Argentina in the final. However, I do have the United States taking home some silverware, as they will be beating Canada in the third place game.
Ooh,
the third place game, the game that nobody wants to play.
Yes, I think you must try to save your job. Kind of how I built my group stage and how it all fizzles out. The U.S., they're going to have a road where they're going to have to beat Colombia by topping the group. They'll play Colombia in the next round. I think they beat them. I think Uruguay ends Brazil's dreams in the round of 16. And then as they progress, Uruguay will beat the United States. It'll be the semifinals at that point. So Uruguay over the U.S., Argentina over Canada. And then the rest will fizzle out that way. So,
okay. So you've got the U.S. in the semifinal. I mean, that would be, I think that would have to be an unqualified success. Sam, do you have the U.S. going that far, all the way to the semifinal?
I don't know if they're going to be able to get it. Obviously, I think it does depend on matchup. But personally, if they were to kind of get past that group stage and get knocked out immediately, I regret to say this, but I would not be surprised.
I'm going to go with the same. I think they get out of the group and then they get knocked out at the first opportunity.
It's kind of difficult to look at, because if the U.S. tops the group, more than likely they play Colombia.
Yeah, that's tough.
But if they come second and the same results happen, they play Brazil. So Sam's not going up again. Sam is rooting for Brazil against the United States in any way, shape, or form there.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, Brazil and Colombia, I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, they could, but I don't know. I can't think of any reason why it would actually happen. Other than it would be, you know, it would mix things up, be a lot of fun. But yeah, I just think it's a tough road for them. Yeah. But yeah, and then I also have Uruguay beating Argentina in the final. And again, it's really just because, you know, in the 12 years that I spent coaching, my by far biggest influence was Marcelo Bielsa. Actually, the one game in particular, Athletic Bilbao against Spain, Barcelona in the fall of 2012, actually kind of set the roadmap for how I wanted my teams to play for the 12 years after that. So he's been a big influence in my career. Really, really enjoyed that he got an opportunity in the Premier League. Enjoyed that he, you know, won the most difficult league in the world to win, which is the English Championship. And I'm really hoping he can cap off his incredible career by winning a Copa America. But they definitely look. I mean, the good thing is, you know, Uruguay looks pretty strong. Brazil usually figures it out. Argentina obviously looks like a great team. Colombia is strong. Canada and the U.S., there's reasons to think that they can both make a run. It's, you know, it looks like a pretty entertaining tournament, which is, you know, that's kind of the whole point. So we'll wrap up here. Caleb, you know, what are you most looking forward to out of this? Are you focused on the U.S. making a big run, or do you want to see – one of the South American teams just go on a tear and just rip everybody to pieces? You know, what are you kind of looking forward to over the next month?
I would say three things kind of to see. Number one is how the United States, Canada, and Mexico perform specifically. Number two, more US-based, is who shouldn't be here, whether that's the coach, whether that's a player, whether that's multiple players. And third, I want good soccer, good footy. I want to see good games. I don't want to see 6-0 games. I really don't. I can care less. I want to see a 2-1, 1-0. I want a 10 yellow card. I want a dog fight. I want
10 yellow cards.
I want a dog fight.
You sound like Caleb Porter. Caleb Porter loves a yellow card. Why do you want to see 10 yellow cards?
I want to see dog fights. I looked at, I think Argentina, I don't know if it was Argentina or Uruguay, played against Brazil. I forget who they played. It was a game in, it was teams that are playing in Copa America, recently played. I think there was like 16 yellow cards, 3 reds in like a friendly game on like a Tuesday night. Like friendly game. Like I'm like, I want to see war. I want to see war. I want to see the U.S., Canada, Mexico. I want to see who the U.S. will seclude or get rid of. And I want to see dogfights. Let's see it.
All right. Sam, what are you looking for some different things to happen over the next month? Or do you also want this thing to turn into a Thunderdome?
I will give 3 things. Obviously, got to focus on the United States. Really interested to see what they do. Also, very kind of interesting to see how Brazil handles this tournament. I just want to see upsets. Give me Bolivia beating Uruguay. Give me some nonsense. Also, bonus one, even though there's no limit to this, I just want to see how John Bell does in Jamaica. Mostly just because I love John Bell.
Shout out, hashtag announce John Bell.
How do we make it? How do we get an hour and a half through this podcast without mentioning John Bell? I think obviously we want to see good soccer, whatever your definition of good soccer is. But I think Sam, great point. Upsets are what make tournaments special. You know, you think about why so many people watch the NCAA men's basketball tournament. It's not because it's great basketball necessarily. It's not because they're big basketball fans. It's not because they're obsessed with UConn to an unhealthy level that ruins a small group chat on a daily basis. It's the upsets. It's things that are happening that you don't expect to happen. So I definitely, I think I'd have to agree there. Hopefully we get some of that. But I think I'm really most interested, honestly, in seeing how Canada does. I don't know why. Jesse Marsh is kind of an interesting guy to me. He's a pretty outspoken individual. You know, he had this flight to, he went from the bottom to the top of the Red Bull system, found his way over to the Premier League, and, he kind of, floundered around, feels like maybe he got, turned down by the U.S. and they weren't very nice to him. And now he's on like this redemption streak with the Canadian national team. So I think there's potentially a pretty interesting narrative there. And, Canada is near and dear to my heart as well for no real reason other than I've been there twice and I like it. So for me, I'd like to see Canada at least keep things interesting, see some upsets. And again, like to see Marcel Bielsa lift the, I don't even know what the trophy looks like, but whatever it looks like, lift it up high and take it back on Uruguay. So we will, what is that? It's blue.
It's the Copa sticker book.
Yeah, baby. I'm a nerd.
They still make sticker books?
Oh, and I guess.
Yeah.
And you have enough excess money that you purchased them?
I'd like to smell that one pack.
Where's all that Blazing Musket money going, Sam? Is this fine?
No, I'm not embezzling money to buy Copa America USA 2024. No, a pack of stickers costs a nice like $1.
Oh, okay. That's reasonable.
Yeah.
I take it back. That's a reasonable expense. Caleb, where can people find you on social media and where might they find your other soccer-related work?
Of course, you can find all of my social media. Mainly, I'm on Twitter at Caleb Pongratz 10. That's CalebPongratz 10. That's on Twitter. You can find all my work for Prost Soccer. Right now on prostinternational.com. I'm not going to spell it because that's kind of easy. It's PROST though is the first part, international.com. And if you want to dive into my social life, Caleb_Pongratz on Instagram, come hang out.
All right. And what do you typically cover? You cover the Revolution. What is that it? Or what is the full scope of your coverage?
Currently, right now, covering the Revs, as well as I'm credentialed for the USL Championship, covering Rhode Island FC. So, majority of my content has to do with the New England Revolution, potential trades and transfers, as well as everything having to do with RAFC as well. So, Revs, RAFC, you might get some transfers out of the blue. And essentially soccer takes and everything about Boston sports. So,
all right, good stuff. Sam, where might people be able to stumble across your work on the internet?
You can definitely check us out at the Blazing Musket. Make sure to check us out there, covering all New England soccer. Going to have Copa all covered out. Jay Cattanese will have lovely previews. I'll have some game coverage for various nations. So make sure to subscribe. And, you know, you can follow me on Twitter at Sam_Minton22. But yeah, appreciate it, Tom. Always a blast. And I wonder where people can find you.
Well, yeah, so I am back on Twitter, as most people know at this point, at TPinZone343. And I also write for the Blazing Musket. I'll have the much anticipated New England Revolution Quarter 2 analyst report out tomorrow morning. So you can look forward to that. Really appreciate Caleb Porter giving us his points for game projections for quarter 3 so we can work that into the analysis. He seems to be taking the CEO thing a little too seriously. But it's great. Gives us a little bit of fun. So you can find all my work there. And then, of course, we'd like to just a quick moment to thank Sam and Caleb for joining us this evening. You know, love to have you guys back on. Obviously, the bullpen's a little bit more crowded this year with the four of us doing Revolution Recap most weekends. But it's always great to have you guys and get your opinions and you know, have a little bit of fun talking about this tournament. So thank you for coming on. We will be back this weekend after the next New England Revolution game. So however that goes, good, bad, or otherwise, we'll be back on Sunday or Monday to talk all about it. We'd also like to thank all of our sponsors for their support of this podcast. Yes, we'd like to thank the Rebellion Supporters Group, Subtruck Law, 6 Point Builders, The Blazing Musket, and Bet Online. So hopefully you are now prepared, excited, and ready to go for the Copa America, which kicks off on June 20th. So check that out and check out Caleb's work, check out Sam's work, and of course, continue to follow on with us as we track the Revolution season as it continues.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.